This week's parasha is entitled Teruma, which means contribution. And Teruma takes us from Exodus 25 through 27:19. Adonai said to the sons of Israel, he tells them, raise a contribution for me from every man whose heart moves him. And then he says, let them construct a sanctuary for me. The subject matter of these chapters, and really most of the rest of the book of Exodus, is the tabernacle, and especially the Ark of the Covenant, the Mishkan. God gives Moses a very detailed blueprint, as it were, for the Mishkan. And the list of materials for its construction is really quite fascinating. It included gold, silver, and bronze. And I know Rabbi Lauren would want you to know that gold closed at $1,610 an ounce last night. Gold, silver, and bronze, but invest in silver because it's undervalued. Okay. Blue, purple, and scarlet colored fabric. Goat hair. Ram skins dyed red. Porpoise skins. And I'm thinking, that's got to be a very rare and costly thing. I mean, where are you going to find porpoises in Sinai? So very valuable, treasured things. Acacia wood, oil and spices, onyx stones, and other precious and semi-precious stones. And all of this was for one most significant, really a magnificent purpose, which God declared to be that I may dwell among them. The verb shachan, from which we get Mishkan, means to dwell or to inhabit. God's command that we construct a tabernacle was not merely to keep us busy and out of trouble, which wouldn't have worked anyway because we know the story of Exodus. But it wasn't just about keeping us busy, giving us something to do. It was to be a labor of love, with love as its ultimate purpose. See, people equate love with emotion. But authentic love is about commitment. Feelings wax and wane, but love leads to action. It always yields tangible results. Love costs something. Well, here was an opportunity for our people to express our love for Adonai. Though Israel left Egypt with great wealth, it doesn't mean that everyone had gold to contribute, or even necessarily silver or bronze, but I think it's safe to say everyone had something that was on this list, even if it was just some spices or some oil. And there wasn't even the slightest hint of compulsion. This was altogether voluntary. Let me reiterate, God said, from every man whose heart moves him. Now, the ark, of course, was the most significant piece of furniture. It was to be made out of acacia wood and overlaid with pure gold, inside as well as out. It was never to be picked up and hand-carried, but four rings made out of cast gold were to be put on the four corners, fastened there, and poles, also made of acacia wood and also overlaid with gold, were to be used to carry the ark whenever it was time for Israel to pack up and set out. The ark would hold the tablets containing the Ten Commandments, also called the Testimony, and eventually also house the jar containing that sample of manna and Aaron's rod, which had sprouted buds, confirming God's choice of the tribe of Levi to serve him there. The ark was to have a solid gold covering called the kaporet, which means covering, but which has come to be translated alternately as the mercy seat or propitiation, because that same root, kaper, is the verb for atonement, to cover. Its dimensions were to match the length and the width of the ark, but it was far more than just the top of a box. In fact, it was of such importance that in 2 Chronicles chapter 28, the Holy of Holies is actually called the House of the Kaporet. Above the Kaporet was where God would manifest himself in a cloud. The Kipporet was also to be adorned on its top with two golden cherubim, also of solid gold, facing each other, one at each end, their wings spreading over it and touching each other at the center. In chapter 27, we find that the altar was also to be constructed of acacia, and that altar was 7.5 feet by 7.5 feet and 4.5 feet high. But the altar was to be overlaid with bronze rather than gold. The altar was to have four horns, one adorning each corner, but not glued on. Rather, those horns were to be carved out of the same solid piece of acacia wood that the rest of the top of the altar was made. And the altar also was to be carried by poles, not ever by hand. And I think we're meant to understand the holiness of these things. Sinful human hands were never to touch these once they were completed. And the tools of the altar were likewise to be made of bronze. Finally, we're given the dimensions of the outer courtyard of the tabernacle surrounding the tent, 150 feet by 75 feet. Let me just share a few thoughts about Parashat Teruma as I close. Could not God, who is all-powerful and whose artistry is infinitely greater and more imaginative than our own, have simply spoken a word and brought the tabernacle into being? Wouldn't it have been vastly more beautiful and refined than anything of our own doing? He asked frail and sinful men to construct this holy thing. Perhaps we are to see the use of porpoise skins and goat hair and wood and fabric as representing man's earthbound nature, whereas the gold and the silver and the precious things perhaps representing God's purity and holiness, and yet they meet at this place. The tabernacle. The point is, God invites us to participate rather than to merely observe. He could certainly do things more skillfully and thoroughly and efficiently than we, but by bringing a beautiful and perfect end result out of the efforts of flawed humanity, he will be all the more glorified. During the wilderness wandering, the Ark of the Covenant was at least visible on occasion as Israel followed God and moved from place to place. But think about this. Eventually, that ark would be placed permanently in the Holy of Holies in the temple, where it would be seen by only one man and only once per year and only for a very short period of time. Does it make you wonder, why have all this beauty, the ornate hammered gold, the winged cherubim, if it would never be seen and appreciated by men? I think the point of it is that the beauty of all these things is for him. He sees. Just as there are beautiful mountain flowers that no one ever sees, but he sees. And just as there are fascinating deep sea creatures that until recently no one had ever seen, he sees. And his creative power is there. So he created them, and everything and everyone exists for him, for his pleasure. See, the tabernacle isn't about us. It's about him. It's about God's glory. But let me say this. The tabernacle is most definitely for our sake. God deigned to dwell in the midst of sinful human beings in the time of the tabernacle and later the temple. And we needed that. So it's about him, but it's for our sake. Now, and he humbled himself to do this. Consider then the weightiness of the fact that in this new covenant, God, through the Holy Spirit, now dwells within us. Rabbi Paul, writing to the Corinthians, said, "What agreement is there between the temple of God and idols? For we are the temple of the living God. As God has said, I will live with them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people." If we are his house, it stands to reason that we need to keep that house clean. Passover is approaching. What leaven would he have you remove from that temple?